Last time, I talked about the law of karma. The law of karma is part of the law of cause and effect. Today, I'll talk about another part of the law of cause and effect, and that is dependent origination. With regard to the cause and effect, there are three views. The first is that everything, both animate and inanimate, is created by a god or a Brahma. And the second view is that things or beings happen without cause. So there is no cause for their arising and disappearing. And the third view is that Buddhist view. And the third view is that it is not created by anybody or any god or Brahma, and it is not causeless, but there are causes or conditions for everything to arise. The law of dependent origination teaches us that there is nothing that is absolute, so everything is relative, and everything depends upon some other thing for it to arise. And dependent origination is the law of cause and effect for living beings, or for the round of rebirth or round of existences. There is another teaching of law of cause and effect in Buddhism, and that is the Patthana conditions, or the causal relations. Now, Patthana conditions cover all or both animate and inanimate things, or both living beings and non-living things. And also, in Patthana, not only is it stated that something is conditioned by some other thing, but it also gives us how they are conditioned, in what way or by what force of condition they are conditioned. So the law of dependent origination and the law of Patthana conditions are a little different. The teaching of dependent origination is very important in the Buddha's teachings, because it makes Buddhism unique among all religions. When finding the origin or origination of things, most other religions end up with the creation of a higher being, or a creation of a god or a Brahma. But in Buddhism, the origination of beings, especially with regard to dependent origination, so origination of beings is explained in a very reasonable way, or in a way that is acceptable to all thinking persons. The brief statement for the law of dependent origination is when this exists, that comes to be. Because of this arising, that arises. So this is the brief statement of the dependent origination. Something arises or happens dependent upon some other thing. And so whether Buddhas appear in the world or not, there is always this structure of causation or this law of dependent origination. But Buddhas appear and then they discover the law of dependent origination and they revealed it or taught it to the world. The law of dependent origination was known to the Buddha even before his enlightenment. In a discourse in the Digha Nikaya, as well as in the Sanyutta Nikaya, that every bodhisattva on the eve of their enlightenment reflected upon the law of dependent origination and practices vipassana on the 12 factors in the formula of dependent origination. And as a result of that practice of vipassana on the factors of dependent origination, a bodhisattva becomes a Buddha. So dependent origination, the law of dependent origination was known to the Buddhas even before their enlightenment. Now the formula of dependent origination begins with ignorance. But the line of investigation made by the bodhisattvas, as mentioned in the discourses, is different. Bodhisattvas go backward from old age and death, or they take what is the fact at the present time, and then they trace its origin backward until they reached avijja or ignorance. Now, as beings, we always experience aging. We are getting old day by day, or hour by hour, minute by minute, second by second. So getting old is a fact of life, and it is with us all the time. And one day this life will come to an end. So the end of the life, which is called death, is also inevitable. So there is this getting old and death. And this is a fact, and we cannot run away from these realities. So bodhisattvas reflect in this way. Now there is this old age and death. What is the condition for this old age and death? Because what is there, does old age and death arise? So they investigated and they found out that because there is birth, there is old age and there is death. Because we were born as human beings, we get old day by day, and at the end we will die. So the cause of old age and death in ultimate analysis is birth, because there is a beginning and there is the continuation and there is the end. So birth or rebirth is the cause of or condition for old age and death. But bodhisattvas did not stop at that. They went backward further. So they reflected, why is there jati? I mean, why is there birth or rebirth? What is the condition for birth? What is the cause of birth? And when they tried to find out the cause of birth, they found that it was what is called becoming. Actually, becoming here means something that makes some other thing become. So in fact, it means karma. So they found that the cause of birth, the cause of rebirth, is the karma. You know, there are two kinds of karma. Wholesome karma and unwholesome karma. Wholesome karma gives wholesome or pleasant results, and unwholesome karma gives painful results. To be reborn as a human being is a pleasant result. And so we were born as human beings because we did some wholesome karma in the past. There may be some beings who are born in hell, and they are born in hell because they did some unwholesome karma in the past. So wholesome or unwholesome karma is the cause of the condition for rebirth as a human being or rebirth as any other being. Now, why do we do, or why do beings do both wholesome and unwholesome karma? Or what is the cause of or condition for the wholesome or unwholesome karma to arise? Now we do, sometimes we do wholesome karma, sometimes we do unwholesome karma, because we have a strong desire, a desire that becomes clinging, that means that reaches the stage where it cannot let go. That strong desire is called upadana or clinging. And this clinging is a condition for wholesome and unwholesome karma to arise. For example, we want to be reborn in a better existence. Let's say we want to be reborn in a celestial world. So we hear from somebody that celestial world is much better than the human world. And so we have attachment to that celestial world. We want to be reborn there, and so we have we have clinging for rebirth in the celestial worlds. Now, in order to be reborn in the celestial world, we must do something. Sometimes we may get good advice or correct advice, and so we may do meritorious deeds, which is wholesome karma. Sometimes we may get wrong instructions, like sacrifice a lamb or an animal. So if we do sacrifices with the hope of getting rebirth in the world of celestial beings, we do unwholesome karma, because sacrifice means killing a being, and killing a being is an unwholesome karma. So sometimes we do wholesome karma, and sometimes we do unwholesome karma, because we have this strong desire to be reborn in a better existence. Whether we do wholesome karma or unwholesome karma, there is always the result of that karma. And as you know, the result of wholesome karma is a rebirth in the world of bliss. That means human world or the world of devas. And the result of akusala and wholesome karma is rebirth in the full woeful states. So, because we have this strong desire to reach the better existences, we do good or bad karma. And so the good or bad karma is conditioned by a strong desire or clinging. Now, bodhisattvas went further with their investigation. So what is the condition for clinging? What causes clinging to arise? And they found out that ordinary desire is the condition for strong desire. That means first you have some ordinary desire for something, and then you are attached to it, and you cannot give it up, or you cannot let it go. And so when it reaches that stage, it is called clinging. So before it reaches that stage, it is called craving or attachment or desire. So not too strong craving is the condition for strong craving or clinging. Suppose you see some beautiful thing at a store. So first, you like it. It is a beautiful thing. And then, you cannot get away from it. And you think that you must buy it. And so you buy it. So at the first seeing, and you like it, it is like craving. But later, you cannot get away from it, you must buy it, and you buy it, then it is clinging. So when it reaches the stage of clinging, it cannot let go. So both craving and clinging are one and the same mental state, lobha or attachment, but their degree of attachment is different. So at the stage of craving, it is not so strong, but when it reaches the stage of clinging, it is so strong that it cannot let go. So the condition for strong attachment or clinging is an ordinary or not too strong attachment or craving. Now, why is there a desire? Or why do you like an object? You like the object because you feel good about that. There is a pleasant feeling in you with regard to that object. That is why you like that object. Sometimes the object is not beautiful. You don't like it. But when you see an object you don't like it, you have a longing for an object you like it. You have a longing for a beautiful object. So even when you see an ugly object, and there can be desire or craving, not for that ugly object, but for the beautiful object. So, because there is this feeling, pleasant feeling, or unpleasant feeling, or even neutral feeling, there is this desire. So, the feeling in the mind, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral feeling, is the condition for craving or desire. Now, why is there feeling? We feel good about something or bad about something. So why? What is the condition for that feeling? Because there is the contact with the object, there is feeling. If there is no contact with the object, there will be no feeling. So, feeling is conditioned by what is called contact. Contact is not just things meeting together, but something that arises as a result of the meeting together of some things. For example, when we see something, there is the something to be seen, and there are the eyes. And so when that something to be seen comes into the avenue of the eyes, that is seeing, or seeing consciousness. When these three arise, the eye, the object, and the mind or the consciousness that sees, there also arises what is called contact, a mental state, a joint, something like joint. So because of that joint, feeling follows, and other mental states also follow. So, the condition for feeling is contact with the object. And why does contact arise? Contact arises because, in the example of seeing, because the eyes and the visible object come together. So contact is conditioned by the eye or the sense organs and the corresponding objects. And the sense organs and corresponding objects are called in this formula bases. So there are six internal bases and six external bases. The eye is called a base, the ear is called a base, nose, tongue, body and mind is called a base. And visible object is also called a base and so on. So when these bases come together, there is contact. So contact is conditioned by the bases or by the sense organs and their corresponding objects. Now, among these bases, some are material properties and some are mental states. So, when bodhisattvas investigated why there are bases, they found that because there are mental states and material properties, there are bases. So the mental states and material properties are the condition for for the bases. What is the condition for the mental states and material properties to arise? Now, mental states or mental factors cannot arise if there is no consciousness. Only when there is consciousness, or only when consciousness arises, can they arise. Now, consciousness and some mental states arise at the same time. But consciousness is said to be the chief or their leader, because if there is no consciousness, no mental states can arise together with that consciousness. And also, at the moment of conception, some material properties arise. And these material properties arise only when the consciousness arises. So, the condition for mental states and material properties to arise is said to be consciousness. Here, consciousness means both consciousness at the moment of conception and consciousness and during life. Now here, consciousness means the resultant consciousness. That means consciousness that is the result of something, that arises as a result of something. For example, when we see something we like, there is a seeing consciousness. And that seeing consciousness arises as the result, as a result of some wholesome karma in the past. When we see something we don't like, there is another type of seeing consciousness. And that seeing consciousness is the result of some unwholesome karma in the past. And at the moment of conception, the consciousness that arises is the direct result of karma in the past. So when bodhisattvas investigated why there is consciousness, especially the resultant consciousness, they found out that because there was wholesome or unwholesome karma in the past, consciousness arises. So the condition for consciousness to arise, or the cause for consciousness to arise, is karma. And here karma is called sankhara, formations. And why do wholesome and unwholesome karma arise? Because there is ignorance. Because we are ignorant of the true nature of things, because we are ignorant of the impermanent, suffering and no soul nature of things, we tend to do good or bad or wholesome or unwholesome karma. Not understanding the true nature of things and not understanding the Four Noble Truths is a condition for good or bad karma to arise, and so ignorance is said to be or found to be a condition for wholesome or unwholesome karma. So this line of investigation ends with discovery of ignorance. So if we follow this line of investigation, we are understanding the law of dependent origination backward from the end to the beginning. But the usual formula given in the discourses is from the beginning to the end. So when we go from the beginning to the end of this formula, so we begin with ignorance. So because there is ignorance as a condition, and there are formations or wholesome and unwholesome karma, and because there are wholesome and unwholesome karma as a condition, there is consciousness and so on. So this way we can understand the dependent origination in any direction, from the beginning to the end, or from the end to the beginning. Or sometimes we may pick up something in the middle and then go forward or backward. Although when we go backward, we end with ignorance. Ignorance is not the first cause. Ignorance is not unconditioned. It is also a conditioned phenomenon. It is conditioned by what are called taints, or asavas in Pali. Now, when there is ignorance, then another ignorance follows, and then another ignorance follows. So ignorance is said to be conditioned, the later ignorance is said to be conditioned by former ignorance, and so it goes on and on and on. because ignorance is one of the asavas or pains or kankas. So whenever there the asavas arise, or the ignorance also arises. So ignorance is said to be conditioned by the arising of kankas. Now when we look at these 12, there are altogether 12 steps, 12 factors in this formula. Ignorance, formations, consciousness, mental states and material properties as one, and then basis, contact, feeling, craving, clinging, becoming, rebirth, and then old age and death as one. Now when we look at these 12 factors, we see that some factors belong to the present time or present period, some to the past, and some to the future. And it is in this way that the dependent origination is explained in the commentaries. Now, among the 12 factors, the ignorance and mental formations belong to the past. And rebirth, old age and death belong to the future. And the factors in between, altogether 8 factors in between, belong to the present period. Now, we must not misunderstand this statement. Although these 12 factors are distributed to 3 periods, we must not understand that they operate only in their respective temporal period, because in this life, in a single life, we all experience these 12 factors. Now, in other words, we are not to understand by this commentarial explanation that we must go through 3 lives in order to complete the 12 factors mentioned in the formula. Because we can see that in this life is our present life, in this life we experience ignorance, we experience sankharas, we experience any other things. So we experience all these 12 factors in this life. But when these 12 factors are distributed among the 3 time periods, then some belong to the past, some belong to the present. So the ignorance and sankharas we experience here could be the past if we take the next life as present. Now, rebirth, old age and death are said to belong to future period. But that does not mean that we will experience rebirth, old age and death only in future lives. We will experience these in this life, right? But look at from the point of view of the past life, then the rebirth, old age and death in this present life is future. So, although these 12 factors are distributed among three periods, we all experience these 12 factors in this very life. And we don't have to go through three lives to complete, to experience all the factors. This we must be very careful, because there are people who think that the commentaries taught that we must go through three lives in order to complete the cycle of dependent origination, and so they said the commentary was wrong. Actually, the commentaries do not say that you have to go through three lives to complete and the cycle of dependent origination. What they said was, these factors belong to the past, these to the present, and these to the future. And so, in actual practice, if we look at ourselves, we know that we experience all these factors in this very life. So, we experience all these 12 factors in this very life, but when you look at these factors from the point of view of this life, or from the standpoint of that the next life, then they become present, past, and future. And in this formula, single conditions are given as a condition for the other condition. But in fact, according to the teachings of the Buddha, or according to teachings of Buddhism, there is no one cause or one effect. So Buddhism accepts the multiplicity of causes and effects. That means mental formations to arise, ignorance is not the only condition. There are other conditions as well, like craving and other mental factors. But here, only the chief conditions or the chief causes are given. So we must understand that they are not the only conditions or the causes for the following conditions or following factors. Dependent origination is not easy to understand, because you have to understand some Abhidhamma in order to understand dependent origination fully, to some extent. And also, you understand dependent origination more fully when you understand the law of Patthana conditions. As I said before, the dependent origination explains only that something is conditioned by some other thing. But it does not teach us how they are conditioned, in what way they are conditioned. Sometimes, if we do not know how they are conditioned, we may misunderstand their relations. Some links are not the real cause and effect. Sometimes two links arise together at the same time, but one factor is called a condition and the other is called conditioned. So in that case, we must understand it with reference to the patana relations. So dependent origination can be understood more fully only with reference to patana conditions. Otherwise, our understanding of dependent origination may not so complete. But even to understand dependent origination without mixing it with patana relations is already difficult. So it is difficult because there are involved abhidhamma terms, and also we have to understand what these terms represent. So the general meaning of the dependent origination is that everything arises dependent upon some other thing. So there is nothing which arises without conditions, and there is nothing which is created. So everything is relative, and everything depends upon some other conditions to arise. So next month we will study the patana relations. So the difference between dependent origination and patana relations is something like saying these two persons. Dependent origination is like saying these two persons are related. And patana conditions is like saying these two persons are related as father and son, or as older brother and younger brother, and so on. Now this is the origination. Now dissolution or disappearance is also included in the formula of dependent origination. Actually, it is not dependent origination, but dependent disappearing or something like that. And that goes similarly with the normal order of origination. That means because of the disappearance of ignorance, there is the disappearance of formations. Because of the disappearance of formations, there's a disappearance of consciousness, and so on. So that is called the reverse order. But reverse means not going backward. Reverse here means disappearing. So it is the reverse of or the opposite of arising. So when there is old age and death, those who are oppressed with old age and death have ignorance arisen in them. And so when suffering from old age and death, they suffer from what are called cankers, and among the cankers there is ignorance. And so when there is ignorance, there are wholesome and unwholesome karma, and so on. And so this wheel of life goes on and on if we cannot eradicate the root causes, if we cannot eradicate the mental defilements altogether. But even as we practice meditation, especially vipassana meditation, we are cutting this wheel at some place. We are not letting this wheel go on and on when we practice vipassana meditation. And as you know, when you practice vipassana meditation, you can break the link between especially feeling and craving. Although you have feeling, you will not have craving if you practice vipassana meditation, if you practice mindfulness. So by the practice of vipassana meditation, we can sever some links in this law of dependent origination. So you have a pleasant feeling, and if you are not mindful, if you do not make notes of its pleasant feeling, you like it. And so when you like it, you let this dependent origination or this wheel of life roll on and on. And if you have unpleasant feeling, and then you long for a pleasant feeling, again, you are letting this wheel of life go on and on. You have a neutral feeling. Neutral feeling is very good, and so you will like it. So when you like it again, you are letting the wheel go on and on. But when you practice vipassana meditation and you make effort to be mindful whenever any feeling becomes prominent, then you are cutting this wheel. You are not letting this wheel of life go on and on. And so by the practice of vipassana meditation, we are trying to cut this wheel of life. And if we are successful, totally successful with our practice, and if we reach the stage of arahantship, then we'll be able to cut this or destroy this wheel of life altogether. Buddha described these factors in the dependent origination as a mess of suffering. So this mess of suffering goes on and on and on, so long as we cannot get rid of mental defilements altogether. If we want to get out of this wheel of life, if we want to break this wheel of life and get out of suffering, then we should do something to stop this wheel from rolling on and on. And that is application of mindfulness to the object at the present moment. So when you practice vipassana meditation, you are trying to cut this wheel. You are trying to stop this wheel from rolling on and on. So at every moment of good mindfulness, at every moment of understanding the true nature of things, you are going towards destroying this wheel of life. And for that purpose, we practice vipassana meditation. And so we hope that one day we'll be able to achieve our goal and cut this wheel of existence or the round of rebirth. Okay. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. take dependent origination as just arising of something dependent upon some other thing, then we could say so. But if we take dependent origination as the whole formula, I think we cannot. Because at every moment, we may not get all these 12 factors.
So the base.
We find the word used as in the five aggregates, right? Sankhara Khanda. And here, as a factor of the dependent origination. At least there are two meanings for this word, sankhara. The word is the same, but by explanation, according to etymology, it means two things. One is something that, let us say, that makes, that produces. So there is an active meaning. And it can also be understood in a passive sense. That means something that is made or that is produced. So there are two meanings to the word sankhara. Now, not only two, there are other meanings too. But what is important to understand here is two meanings. Sankhara is something that produces and also something that is produced. Now the word sankhara in dependent origination means karma, right? So karma is something that produces its results. So here we have to understand the word sankhara in an active sense. But when we say sabbe sankhara anicca, all sankharas are impermanent, we have to understand it in a passive sense. There, sankhara means all that are conditioned, that are made, that are produced, or that are conditioned. So whenever we see the word sankhara in the discourses, we have to be very careful. We have to know whether to be understood in the active sense or passive sense. And in sankhara khanda, we should understand it to mean in an active sense, because sankhara khanda is headed by Chetana, right? Which is called sankhara or karma. So in the word sankhara khanda, we must understand it in an active sense. And also here in the independent origination, we understand it in an active sense. But in the verses in the Dhammapada, sabbe sankhara anicca and so on, we should understand it to in passive sense. So at least there are two meanings to the word sankhara. Whenever we see the word sankhara, we cannot translate it by just one word, one English word or one Burmese word or one Vietnamese word. So we have to understand according to context, whether it is to be understood in the active sense or passive sense. Now, nowadays the word sankhara is translated as formations. The Venerable Jnanatiloka also translated as formations or karma formations or mental formations. I don't know whether that is correct or not. Can formation means both something that is formed and something that forms? No? Yeah. Formation seems to mean something that is formed. So it is better to translate it as conditioned and conditioning. Mm-hmm.